We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Green Bay Packers fans? Welcome back to another edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Jacob Morley. You can find me on Twitter at Jacob Morley, and I am joined, guess who's back? Back again, Ross Uglum, back from his PGA golf tour premiere. Just kidding. But Ross, how the heck are you, man? I saw that you potentially won a golfing tournament, did well on the links recently.
Yeah, some listeners might remember Ryan Hilsland from the days of From the Benches. He came up and played in our member guest, and it was really fun. 72 teams. It was a handicapped net event, and we won five nine-hole matches. We didn't win them all, but won our flight, got into the knockout derby style championship round, and we're the last team standing. So it was a ton of fun. Plenty of drinks were had. It was fun. I mean, it's really fun to still compete.
Job, Brooksy. Actually, before we get into football, what's your take on that, Ross, on the golf world, on the Brooks Koepka DeChambeau little rivalry that's going on?
I mean, I think it's good for golf. I think, you know, anything that gets you closer to other sports is generally good for golf. People think it's soft. People think it's very white, which it is. But, you know, people think that it's, you know, kind of the sport of the rich, and it's doesn't have, you know, the wide appeal that the NFL or the NBA does. And I don't think it'll ever get there, but it's to have these rivalries and have actually guys, you know, talking junk, that's getting you closer and closer to, you know, some of the more mainstream sports, and some of that drama, you know, is what makes these so attractive, you know, and what people dig that, man. Like the NBA at this point, I think people are more interested in like player movement in the off season and who's beefing with who on Twitter than just about everything but the actual NBA finals. And that's just, you know, something that the PGA is lacking, because there are no teams, there are no transactions. So when two guys legitimately have beef, I think it's just tremendously entertaining and providing something that golf doesn't normally provide.
Yeah, and you basically just touched on exactly what I am as a fan, as someone that doesn't watch golf regularly. I love that there is a rivalry between those two guys. Draws me in. And I also don't really watch NBA basketball until the playoffs. So
that's so me. Boom, there you go.
That's me. But speaking of watching and all eyes being on something, obviously we need to touch on the Aaron Rodgers drama. Typically, if there's no news, we don't give you news. But there was some news today, Ross. And today it's Monday evening right now. And it seems like a lot of the news comes from the Pat McAfee show. And David Bakhtiari was on the show today. And we don't need to go down the rabbit hole of the body language police or the semantics police. But One thing that I did find really interesting that he said, and he didn't say a lot, but he
smart
said,
guy.
And he is. And I quote, I'm not really actually quoting, I'm paraphrasing. He's excited to watch how this all unfolds. And Ross, my question for you is, because I think it's interesting to say, when you're talking about the possibility of not playing with the MVP, with not playing with your alleged best friend, excited to watch it unfold seems like an interesting choice of words, specifically excited, because anything that involves Aaron Rodgers not being in Green Bay for David Bakhtiari, to me, feels like it's not that exciting. So what was your take on that, just having listened to that?
Yeah, you know, I think you're probably right. And it's the same thing I've said all along. People ask me my opinion of what's going to happen if the quarterback comes back. I think one way or another, he's under contract for 3 years. They're not prepared to move on from him. And he doesn't have any real ability to move on from them. You know, this isn't the NBA. The player empowerment era isn't, you know, I would say it isn't quite here yet. They are certainly more powerful than they have been in the past. And I think he's got to be one of the more powerful players probably in, you know, the NFL outside of maybe Mahomes. But he also can't trade himself. Okay, he's not able to do that. He has to basically, if he doesn't want to play for the Packers, he's got to sit out. And so the lack of, you know, actual power in the situation or actual control of his own destiny is what makes me think that he's eventually going to have to come back, even if it's for this, you know, 1 year bridge that people keep talking about as a compromise. I actually don't think that happens. I actually honestly think they end up figuring out like an actual deal for him to be the guy. And at some point the Jordan Love thing just kind of gets written off as a mistake, or written off as not even necessarily a mistake, but just knowing that, okay, this is not going to be what we do. We thought we had a declining quarterback. We don't. We still believe in our evaluation of Jordan Love, but this is only a 4-year contract with a 1-year option. And right now, it would appear that we have this opportunity to win with number 12. And, you know, I think he's pissed. And I will say this too, you know, Gutekunst, whatever. I think he's done a great job rebuilding the roster. I think they should keep him, honestly. But if, you know, they need to throw Mark Murphy out of the plane to get this whole thing copacetic, I'll hand him a parachute. Yeah. I you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. I think I tweeted that the other day where it's like, you know, all of this, I would put myself in the camp of I'm really annoyed with 12. I am. And I don't know everything going on in the background. I have no idea. But the optics of it to me aren't good. I'm annoyed with it. I still want him to be the quarterback in Green Bay. Make no mistake about that. I want the reigning MVP to be my quarterback. I still believe in Jordan Love. I said I think I may be Jordan Love's biggest fan. I think we saw some of the potential and the upside this last week at minicamp. And lastly, I don't really give a damn about Mark Murphy. You don't think they can find someone to do Mark Murphy's job?
Go do Mark Murphy's job.
Right.
I will go do it. I volunteer as tribute.
Yeah, I'll do it for half of what he's making as well.
Exactly.
But you get what I mean? Like, that is a dream job for a lot of really smart businessmen. So it just kind of comes down to that. If that's even the issue, I don't know. I'm with you, though, where it's like, you know what? 12, I think if he wanted out, he would have said he wanted out. He has not said that he wants out. I think ultimately this is a play for him to stay in Green Bay because he doesn't want to leave. He wants that security that he wants to be in Green Bay. And he also has alluded to the stuff about he doesn't really jive with the way things go in Green Bay. And that's why going back to David Bakhtiari saying what he said today, it almost makes me wonder, does David Bakhtiari kind of feel the same way? Is this a feeling amongst the veterans in Green Bay that they don't necessarily love the philosophy that Green Bay has? Because when you say, I'm excited to watch this unfold, does that mean he's kind of going to bat for you? That he's kind of going to bat for some of the older guys on the team that maybe don't appreciate, you know, kind of the draft and develop, but the young guys play more type philosophy, which, mind you, hasn't really been the philosophy the last few years, but that's neither here nor there. So I just think that's interesting. And moving on from Aaron Rodgers, and I guess it is important to note that James Jones was just on NFL Network moments ago, really downplaying the Mark Murphy complicated fella comments, which were wild. But just basically said, don't read too much into it. So there you go. James Jones probably is one of the few people that is talking to 12. That has actually spoken with him on the issue. So when he is saying stuff right now, he is someone that I am listening to. But there you go. That's our first 10 minutes of our show dedicated to the drama that is going on around 12. And I had a thought today, Ross, where it's like, and this isn't a slight at any Packers podcast out there, but I was in my car today listening to a few, and I just had the thought, it's like, I don't know what day this is. I don't know what period of time this podcast was recorded, because the news on Aaron Rodgers hasn't really changed since April. We're still sitting here, you know, poring over the few words that we have gotten. And so it's just really interesting that not a lot has changed. And I think that bodes well for both sides, honestly, because I think it probably hasn't changed since before April either. But speaking of the team, and what we're going to do today is talk about the rest of the team and not just the quarterback. We will talk about the quarterbacks on this team. And what Pro Football Focus did a few weeks ago that I thought was really interesting is they always do their preseason positional group rankings, and they did their rankings for the Packers. So we will roll through them and just go rank position by position, Ross. And I will tell you where Pro Football Focus has them, and I want you to tell me, is that too high, is that too low, or is that just right, and why? So let's start with the quarterbacks. For the quarterbacks for the Green Bay Packers, Pro Football Focus has them ranked as a unit third overall in the National Football League. Ross, too high, too low, or just right?
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
I mean, I'd probably say too low if they knew Rodgers was in there. I don't see how, was the defending MVP, he's not number one or number two. I think all conversations have to start with Rodgers and Mahomes at this point. And then you go with who has a better number two, or like a number two that people care about more than Jordan Love. Nobody.
Right.
But I'm not going to quibble with it either. You know, I don't think it's a huge deal. I would assume Kansas City and somebody else was ranked ahead of them. But yeah, there's ambiguity obviously involved with who the hell is number 12 going to play for. You know, I mean, that's but I don't know if that affected the actual rankings that they did or not. I would assume no, or they wouldn't. If they thought Love was actually going to be the starter, they wouldn't have ranked them three.
That's a good point. Yeah, I think they did to an extent kind of have that.
Little hedge.
Because I think it was Kansas City and Buffalo that were ahead of them. So obviously they're going heavy on starters. But I think, yeah, if you're truly looking at it as a group, what team has the reigning MVP and a second-year player that was a first-round draft?
First-round pick, yeah.
Yep. So but like you said, third, tough to argue with, but I would have them first. And if you're going just off talent alone, who's in that room or who is expected to be in that room, I don't think Green Bay.
And I don't think Banker or Bortles is, like, terrible either.
No. Yeah, they talk about Bortles as well in that room. Like, that's another first-round draft pick, top five draft pick. So he's not talented. He's just not very good. But moving on to the running backs, and this is actually where I think it starts to get pretty interesting. because at the running back position, they have them 10th. So, Russ, 10th for the Green Bay Packers. Running backs too high, too low, or just right?
Oh, I think it's probably just right. You know, I haven't looked at these ones specifically, but I think there's reason to be really bullish on the Packers' backs. I think, you know, Aaron Jones is certainly a top 5, 6, 7, 8 guy, and then you can have your questions about Kylan Hill and A.J. Dillon, certainly. If that those happen to be the three guys that get work, A.J. Dillon was a widely mocked pick, and Kylan Hill's a 7th-round pick. So, you know, you can get into and I don't know if you love like the pass catching ability of anybody not named Aaron Jones, at least from a proven perspective. And that's what they're going to miss with Jamal Williams. Jamal Williams was actually, in my opinion, an overrated runner. I get the put your head in somebody's chest and try to run them over thing. But, you know, Jamal wasn't 6'2", 240 either. And I just thought it was not a very efficient running style. However, he's great at pass pro. He's great catching the ball. And that's something that like Dillon and Hill or Dexter Williams or whomever or Patrick Taylor are going to have to prove that they can do if they're going to use Jones in the slot or if, you know, he's not – Aaron Jones is not somebody who has stayed healthy his entire career. So it'd be interesting. The saving grace in that, of course, is Amari Rodgers. You know, you can just kind of fix your way into that if you need to.
Yeah, and I thought you were going to go too high or too low on that one, but I agree that that's just right. And I think a lot of Packers Nation is really excited about the potential and the prospect of A.J. Dillon, but A.J. Dillon's only, you know, I am too. I think A.J. Dillon's going to be a really good number two running back. I think him and Aaron Jones have the potential to be one of the best tandems in the league, but he's only played, you know, we've only seen it one game. So
yeah,
when you boil it down, that's really what we have to go off of. And I believe in A.J. Dillon, but that's kind of just what we're going off of, what they're going off of. So it's hard to fault them for putting them there. And honestly, if anything, you might say that's a little high even for what they have, as good as Aaron Jones is. But the receiving core for Green Bay, so they included wide receivers and tight ends. The Aaron Rodgers weaponless Green Bay Packers came in at 14th. For Pro Football Focus. Ross, too high, too low, or just right?
It's too low. It's too low. You have the best receiver in the NFL and statistically one of the best tight ends in the NFL. I mean, you actually go in and you do a deep dive on Robert Tonyan's numbers from last year, and not just because he was the tight end in an Aaron Rodgers offense. He specifically was incredibly good, and I don't think enough people are talking about it. Marquez Valdes-Scantling being a legit deep threat. Look, deep threats, a lot of deep threats have drop issues. You add Amari Rodgers into that mix. You add the continued development of an Alan Lazard or the continuing development of an Equanimeous St. Brown. And then you add the wild card that is Devin Funchess, who has shown nothing if he's not a functional third or fourth wide receiver. This is an above average group because of the two elite players that they have, which is to say nothing of the potential development of a Josiah DeGuara or Jay Sternberger, both guys being top 100 picks. Not everybody unanimously agreed with them being top 100 picks, but they're top 100 picks nonetheless. And you have those two guys and another top 100 pick in Amari Rodgers. Again, just teaming up with a legit deep threat, as you saw in the NFC Championship game, as you saw week one against the Vikings last year, as you saw in a number of big spots, basically saving the game against the Colts and then giving it back. But, you know, I think fumbles are kind of random. I think they're more random even than drops. To me, that's above average. And 14th is a very average ranking. I'm not saying they're third or fourth or fifth or anything like that. But you have the best wide receiver in football, and mathematically, or at least by advanced numbers, you have an ascending top to the tight end who is fifth. And that was something I saw even like on TDN was doing like a tourney of all of the divisions and like their all-star teams against each other. And they chose Hockenson over Tonyan, and I audibly laughed.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting too is the running backs and the tight ends. I think you could almost flip flop them, or at least give the receiving corps at least a 10. I would probably put them at 9 or 10. So I think they're a little bit low. I think they're a top 10 group because of what you just said. You have Devontae and you have Tonyan, who are both, you know, studs at their respective positions. And what's interesting to me is, you know, obviously you're going to get Kansas City's in the top three. Okay. Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams. I'm taking Devontae Adams. Okay. Travis Kelce, Robert Tonyan. Obviously I'm taking Kelce. But beyond that, beyond those top two guys at both of their positions, neither of these teams, if you want to talk about depth, Kansas City's depth is worse than Green Bay's. Mecole Hardman, give me MVS over him every single day of the week and twice on Sundays. Like, it's not even close. So it's just the thought process behind it of saying, like, well, Green Bay's got these two really good options at wide receiver and tight end. But beyond that, you know, you have an inconsistent MVS. You have an Alan Lazard who we're not really sure, you know, about. Funchess, Amari Rodgers, all that stuff. That's a lot better than what Kansas City's looking at, who's a top three group. I think they're second in this ranking. So I'm not saying they're as good as Kansas City. Like you said, I'm not saying they need to be above them. I'm just saying, like, if you're going to go with that process and say, well, Kansas City has these two studs, so they're a top three unit. Well, so does Green Bay. So where do you put them? So that's just – it's interesting to me. And I know that PFF didn't love Tonyan. He's – I don't think he's a top 10 tight end for them. But frankly, okay. I think they're wrong. You know, so and a part of that I think is that he's only done it 1 year. So we'll see. We'll see after this next year if he can do it again, if he was a flash in the pan type guy, if it was a system type thing. We will see. So offensive line, 15th. 15th offensive line. Too high, too low, or just right?
Too low. That's wild to me. I mean, I get it. Like, PFF loves Corey Linsley. Loves. Called him the best center in football, graded him the number one center in football, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, are they taking, like, Bach missing a couple games into this, or what?
Yes. So, they – oh, okay. It says here that this unit could easily – be a top 10 unit again in 2021. Or maybe that was Zach Cruz wrote that. I'm looking at his article. But yeah, so there's – I think they're kind of hedging with him recovering from an ACL. But still, man, it's not 1972. You right. know, like, yeah. Bakhtiari is going to be back, and he's going to be a top five, top three left tackle in the NFL again. Elton Jenkins is maybe – you know, in the conversation for best interior offensive lineman. And then you have super solid Billy Turner. And then you have options at right guard and you have options at center. And the thing about Corey Linsley and center play, and maybe PFF doesn't agree with me on this, but I've just always thought centers look a lot better when they have a stud playing right next to them. And that's, and I don't think it's any, I don't think it is any coincidence that Corey Linsley had his career all-pro year the same year that Elton Jenkins really took a step forward. Even though I know he wasn't always playing on the inside. But, I mean,
yeah,
they got guys there.
So my thing is you have two super elite players in Jenkins and Bakhtiari. And last year showed Turner was at least a league average player. I mean, that's what he was,
which is really good, you know, like right. offensive line play.
So, you know, Lucas Patrick is fine. But you assume that you would hope that the Myers kid from Ohio State can be better than Lucas Patrick at center. And then at right tackle or right guard, depending on what you do with Billy, you know, you have a bunch of options. You have the Ole Miss kid that everybody likes so much. You have John Runyon Jr. who I like quite a bit. And there are, you know, the chances that Jake Hansen works out or Simon Stepaniak works out or, you know, Van Lannen works out or.
How about this Ben Braden kid, too? Like, yeah. I mean, gosh, yeah, there's depth.
Right. So I just, no matter what, I think in worst case scenario, you're going to end up with two elite players and one league average player. And unless the other two guys that play are terrible, which I don't think they're going to end up being, then you're not an average offensive line, especially when one of those elite players is at the most important position on the offensive line. You have the best left tackle in football. It's very unlikely to me that they'll be average on the offensive line. Yeah, especially yeah. also because their coach kicks ass.
Right. No, that's a good point to make is Stanovich
gets these guys ready to play. And I don't think, and he's got so many bullets in the chamber at that right guard position that, like, hey, if you're not cutting it, I put this guy in. We'll be fine. You know, so I'm not worried about the offensive line until it's something to worry about. That's actually a group that I think that will be one of the most fun positional battles throughout training camp, because there's going to be good players fighting for starting jobs. There's going to be good players that don't start on this Packers offensive line. There's not a lot of teams in the NFL that have that luxury. So, and this is what's wild to me, is the defensive line is actually ranked higher than the offensive line in this positional ranking. The defensive line comes in at 13th. Too high, too low, or just right?
Oh, kind of too high. Yeah. You know, I get how they can get there, you know. I really, really, really like Kenny Clark. There's some shocking analysis for you, but they better like TJ Slayton, man, because I have had it with Dean Lowry. And besides Kingsley Keke, TJ Slayton, and Kenny Clark, it's just guys. It's just dudes. It's just whatever. Like, you know, maybe there are other defensive lines across the NFL that I'm giving too much credit. And I just assume everybody has two studs, and maybe they don't. They probably don't. But yeah, the doomsday scenario for me this year is, what if Kenny Clark gets hurt? You know, am not in love with the options inside, unless the options inside include Rashawn Gary and Za'Darius Smith, and they probably do.
Well, before you keep talking, so I made a mistake here. They did include they've included edge rushers in this rankings.
Oh.
That does change a lot.
Then they're too low. I'm going completely the other way. No, I mean, you know, you hear everything around Rashawn Gary, and if Za'Darius Smith finds anything of himself again, you know, I don't love edge four like Spider Garvin. I'm not in love with that idea, but when you're complaining about edge four, you've kind of gotten pretty far down the list of stuff to complain about. And so, I'm very excited to see him, Randy Ramsey, kind of battle for that job. Preston Smith in an absolutely beyond prove it year as edge three. But with Gary and Z and Kingsley Keke and Kenny Clark, if we're just talking about a front, that's a different thing.
Well, I think they're probably in the right range then, if you think about it. Because if the defensive line by itself is probably – it should be real low, and the edge guys should be real high. So something in the middle, I actually think that's probably just right then, if you're talking about big picture with everybody. So I agree with that. And I like that we actually kind of unpacked it that way because we kind of looked at both sides of it. So the next one, inside linebacker, PFF does not like Green Bay. Dead last, 32nd, too high, too low, or just right, Russ?
It's probably a little bit too low, but not a lot. You know, I don't know enough about it to look in, you know, to everybody's, because I'm one of those guys that doesn't think they matter very much. But yeah, I mean, Kamal Martin has some upside, I think. You know, Barnes has a little bit of juice in the tank potentially. They really like Ty Summers, it turns out. I don't know, man. Devonjay Campbell is fine, I guess. I can definitely see where you could look at this Packers inside linebacker group and think they have a chance to be the worst in the league. I just don't think it matters.
No, and it's funny because when Joe Barry was hired, you know, some people were like, well, maybe they'll care more about the inside linebacker position now. And I was one of them, you know, like not hoping they would, but just honest to God, wondering, like, will they care more about this?
He can turn Corey Littleton into Corey Littleton. You know what I mean? Yeah. And then watch Corey Littleton go somewhere else and not play that well. Like, you know, some of this stuff is coaching. Like, we talk about how great Stanovich is, you know, maybe Barry really is that level of a linebackers coach.
Maybe. We'll see. Maybe Oren Burks will become Corey Littleton. That would be that would be, hey, you want to be a head coach? Show him that. I made Oren Burks good.
Yeah.
Hire the man. No, so yeah, I think to answer the question of do the Packers care about the inside linebacker position, they just signed what's his name, DeAndre Campbell. They're just going to keep doing that. Yeah. You know, every single year, expect them to sign
Antonio Morrison. Yeah. Yeah. Whoever. I get it. Yep.
Better, because they're always out there. They're cheap. You can, and they serve a purpose. They really do. So, and then keep trying to develop young guys, you know, your swings in the mid to late rounds, and maybe you'll get someone on that rookie contract. What's going to really chap Packers fans' ass is when they do get a stud, you know, when they eventually do hit on one of these mid-round guys, that's an above-average to good player, a Desmond Bishop type, if you will, and then don't resign him because I don't care. But moving on. All right. The secondary. So this is the last one on the rankings here. I think in its second highest. Yeah, second highest amongst the group. The entire team, PFF, has them at sixth. Too high, too low, or just right?
For the secondary, I think that's about right. You know, you've got Darnell Savage ascending, I think, star. Doug Farrar really likes him. Thinks he's a top three safety in the league. Adrian Amos, consistently a top 10 safety in the league. Like, never number one or number two, but, like, consistently a very, very, very good player. You have one of the best corners in all of football, and then you got questions. So if you're going to play Nicholas Bates, or play at least not Nicholas Bates, but Nicholas a higher percentage of anything else, then you have three positions that are really good, and then you've got two positions that you just addressed in the top five rounds, including your round one pick. And so there's plenty of possibilities there, but there's also plenty of questions. Like, if Eric Stokes isn't ready, or Kevin King doesn't take another jump, or Josh Jackson never makes it, or if Chandon Sullivan turns into a pumpkin and Shamar Jean Charles isn't ready, like, you can still have two-fifths of that secondary that's problematic. I think all of those things not working out seems unlikely, but maybe not. It could happen. You know, you absolutely could see that happening. So I tend to think that that's about right.
I do too. And I think that's one group that if I would have to say, if there is a group besides the quarterback position that could end the year as a consensus top number one group in the NFL, it's the secondary, just because of what you touched on already. I mean, PFF loves Jaire Alexander. They like Darnell Savage and they love Adrian Amos. So you're looking at, you know, two-fifths of that spot, okay? So Kevin King, if he levels out and can just be an average corner, which I think for the most part is what he is, and if you look around the league, there are a lot of Kevin Kings out there. He is a very league-average cornerback who played poorly in big moments last year. But if he can just be league average and be consistent, just be someone that doesn't get picked on consistently – you know, that's helpful. That's super helpful. Or if Eric Stokes can take that job from him, that's even better, because that means that Eric Stokes is playing better than a league average corner. And then you have options at the slot position in Chandon Sullivan. Hopefully, you know, the inverse of him being bad is him taking a step forward. The inverse of Shamar Jean Charles not being ready is him being ready and being good. So I think, you know, you can look at this position, and I think it's kind of a big pendulum swing where, yes, you have really, really good talent. Sprinkle them in with some average veterans. Sprinkle them in with some young players who are ready to, hopefully, you know, ready to take a step forward and help this team out in year one. So that positional group to me is what I think is the most exciting to watch this year, just because they have talent all over the place. Ross, so last thing before I let you go, give me your positional group that you're most excited to watch, or as David Bakhtiari said, you're most excited to watch unfold this year?
The receivers. I mean, it definitely is different if Love is the quarterback and not Rodgers, but getting everybody back and kind of being a make it or break it situation for a lot of these guys, I think it's going to be fascinating. I think watching MVS in a contract year has a chance to be really, really interesting. Watching the Devin Funchess comeback tour has a chance to be really interesting. Watching Lazard kind of continue to impress, and obviously Devontae in a contract year, and then adding finally a true slot weapon in Amari Rodgers. I just think that the group as a whole has constantly been slept on because everybody likes to make apologies for Aaron Rodgers, and likes to complain about the way that the team has been stocked for Aaron Rodgers, that the receiving group kind of gets shit on for no reason. There could have been more investments here or there or whatever, but they catch a lot of stray bullets for really not a ton of stuff that they did wrong.
Yep. All right. There you have it, guys. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. If you have time, make sure you're going over to iTunes, giving us a 5-star review. That's super helpful to the Pack a Day podcast as a whole. But guys, as always, thank you for listening. And until next time, go Pack Go.